Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Charlie Cook of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Normally good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. I'm not really sure we've got a good one today, but three very interesting stories to go over, Charlie, starting with the fact that last week all the buzz up on Capitol Hill, certainly on the House side, was not only that Lois Lerner was held in contempt by the House Government Oversight Committee, but it was discovered through the majority investigators on that panel that Lois Lerner was passing confidential, sensitive tax documents onto the top Democrat on the committee, Elijah Cummings. Elijah Cummings appeared on Face the Nation this Sunday with Bob Schieffer. It was not a very long interview. No questions, not only about Lerner passing along information that she shouldn't have to him or him opening an illegal investigation against True the Vote, but nothing even on the IRS. There was one question on the supposed pay gap between men and women, a couple of questions about the Sebelius resignation, and then a powder puff question at the end about whether all the wrinkles of Obamacare have been smoothed out, which, of course, Elijah Cummings says he thinks they have. So the bad news here, clearly, is that the mainstream media has no interest in this story, which means it's going to be pretty hard to keep feeding it oxygen.
Well, we've come a long way, haven't we, from the president walking out and making a terse but angry statement about the IRS scandal when it broke. He said he was, as he always does, angrier than everybody else and made it clear that this was a real scandal. And the White House took that line for a few weeks at questions, at press events, Obama himself. But now it's not a scandal, apparently. I mean, the more partisan members of the press and the media will say it outright. This isn't a real scandal. This isn't a real thing. Bill Maher says that week in, week out on his show. And it seems to have been absorbed as if by osmosis in the rest of the press. It's not that Schieffer took the line that this isn't a scandal. It's that he didn't talk about it at all. It just doesn't seem to exist. And there are few things that a government can do that are more serious about this. If we look back, one of the reasons that Richard Nixon is seen as being so venal and so corrupt was that he tried to get the IRS to target his enemies. Now, Elijah Cummings, we're not entirely sure the extent to which he was involved, I suppose, but Elijah Cummings has been linked to this. And I dare say that if he were a Republican and this were a Republican administration, that would be enough at least to elicit questions and probably to elicit nonstop coverage. Chris Christie, for example, is not necessarily the man who originated the bridge closures that MSNBC has now covered nonstop for 4 months. And yet the very fact of his being implicated is seen as big news. Now, the IRS is a lot more important than a bridge closure, not to downplay the Chris Christie story, but it's a lot more important, and absolutely nothing. And I think that says as much as anything that the press, perhaps by a sin of omission as much as commission, just doesn't want or think that scandals that affect conservatives are greatly important.
On to martini number two now. And of course, Charlie, last week the president spent a part of, I believe it was Wednesday, at Fort Hood, Texas, speaking at the memorial service, the second time he's done that in his administration following a horrific, deadly shooting on base there. And Jim and I talked about how the president immediately followed that up with trips to Texas Democratic fundraisers, which seemed a bit distasteful. But now we discover there's even more to the story, and we actually go to Mother Jones for this little tidbit of information. The morning of the memorial, retired Staff Sergeant Alonzo Lunsford, who was shot 7 times during the 2009 Fort Hood rampage, requested that Obama meet briefly with victims and their families while he was on base. Lunsford's letter, which was addressed to the president's chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, also described survivors' disappointment with how they had been treated. In the letter, he said, "As you know, the president and high-ranking members of the military promised me, my family, and other Fort Hood terror attack survivors that the federal government would make them whole," quote-unquote. "After more than 4.5 years, however, the government has yet to make good on this promise. We believe that if the president could hear firsthand our plight and our mistreatment at the hands of his bureaucracy, that he would take the steps needed to set things right. Therefore, we ask for 10 minutes of his time." And Charlie, as we mentioned, this request was made the day of the visit, and the president obviously has a tight schedule. But 10 minutes in that setting not only seems reasonable, it's hard to imagine a good reason why you couldn't fit that in.
Well, this was a choice. Even if, for whatever reason, his schedule was so tight as to preclude a meeting, He does have a telephone. He does have an airplane. He has proven himself willing and capable of meeting with people whom he regards as worthy of his time. He called Sandra Fluke after Rush Limbaugh said mean things about her. He called the victorious plaintiffs in the Supreme Court's gay marriage case. He refers to basketball stars when they come out as being gay, all of which are fine. He brought Henry Louis Gates, the Harvard professor, to the White House for a beer summit, interfering in the process into what was a private matter and possibly a matter of the police, could have yielded a trial. If he wanted to talk to the victims of the first Fort Hood shooting, he would do it. This is a president who has proven himself entirely capable of entering into private affairs, of hanging out with celebrities, and so on and so forth. So no argument along the lines of, look, he's a busy man, look, he can't meet with everybody. It's also distasteful that this choice was made in that, yes, conservatives have in their preferences a smaller government and a diminished role for President Obama and his ilk, but nobody really denies or wishes to change that the president is the commander-in-chief and that that is his primary role. That is the role enumerated in the Constitution before all others. So he has made a choice here to abdicate responsibility for the one area in which he is supposed to demonstrate it. It's not just a matter of political preferences. This is unseemly at all levels.
And, of course, there's a lot of frustration, Charlie, about the fact that still the Pentagon and the Obama administration refer to what happened in 2009 as workplace violence rather than a terrorist attack, when Nadal Hassan has made it blatantly clear before the attack, during the attack, and at his trial afterwards exactly what his motivation was. And I think that's a lot of the reason for the ongoing frustration and why they haven't gotten the help that they need to down there. On to martini number three now, and fortunately after a story of that gravitas, we get a little more fun, but still kind of weird. And the crazy martini today comes from a really glossy puff piece that ran in Washingtonian magazine, and they're, you know, Washingtonians all usually pretty hoity-toity stuff. So they do this major puff piece on White House Press Secretary Jay Carney, his wife Claire Shipman, who works at ABC News, and their kids, and how they do the whole work-life child-raising balance. And there's this picture with Claire Shipman and their two kids flipping fried eggs in the kitchen. But in the background, that's getting a lot of folks in the conservative blogosphere scratching their heads, is that there's two very clear, large posters basically extolling the communist era of the Soviet Union in the extended Carney-Shipman kitchen, Charlie. So is this just conservatives finding one more thing to get upset about, or is this really weird?
Well, I don't know if it's deeply troubling in and of itself. I don't think that Jay Carney is a closet Soviet, but I do think as a broader principle, and this is a point conservatives make an awful lot, there really is no material difference between displaying the valuable propaganda material of a totalitarian regime that is now defunct and putting up the valuable propaganda material of another one, for example, Nazi Germany. And people say, well, that poster is probably worth a lot. And I know that Jay Carney was in Russia during the period that the Soviet Union collapsed. Okay, it's worth a lot. That's fine. I'm sure it is a collector's item. But so, for example, are Nazi flags and plates propaganda material as well. And yet we wouldn't expect the public face of the White House to have them on his wall. And had this magazine come out and there'd been a swastika in the background, nobody would have said, oh, well, calm down, it's just a historical artifact. It is peculiar, and conservatives are right to make this point, that the accoutrements of Nazism are seen as being beyond the pale, but say Che Guevara t-shirts and Soviet Union kitsch is not. And I just think that insofar as Jay Carney's personal tastes demonstrate that, it is worth commenting on.
A lot of people looking at that, I think the whole point of the story is not going to be seen in response to the fact that that's what's getting a lot of folks' attention. And before we let you go, in addition to Charlie's great contributions frequently on Three Martini Lunch, you've got your own new podcast with Kevin Williamson of National Review now, right?
Absolutely. It's called Mad Dogs and Englishmen. It is daily, at least almost every day. And you can check it out on iTunes. It's also on National Review Online, and it's got a website now, which is maddogspodcast.com.
Fantastic. So now you got two reasons to go to National Review Online every weekday. Charlie, again, thanks for today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Charlie Cook of National Review. And for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And please join us again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.